Well, hello, and welcome back to another edition of the Next.io Weekly News, where we continue to push the boundaries of just how unruly one man's hair can become. The hair has taken on a life of its own this week, and I'm frightened that by next week it will have taken over my organism entirely. But anyway, let me say right at the top, thank you to Place and our sponsors for keeping us coming back every week. We wouldn't be able to do it without you. And thanks, of course, for that very funky music to play us in, as we have every week. I am joined this week by a very special guest, the one and only senior reporter from iGaming Next, otherwise known as Next.io. It's Zach Thomas-Aku. Zach, thank you for joining me. How are you doing?
Yeah, I'm doing great, thanks. Thanks for having me on, Connor.
No, the pleasure's all mine. And if you can see behind me, ladies and gentlemen, spring has sprung here in London nearly. Yesterday, as you know, was of course the 93rd of January, and today, finally, the longest month of the year is over. No more dry January, Zach. No more donuts, no more New Year's resolutions. It's time for us to crack on with 2024.
Yeah, it wasn't particularly dry or had many resolutions either. So
no, well, neither did I, but that's okay. So ICE is coming up next week. I don't know if you've heard of that, Zach. It's a little trade show we have here in London every year.
Yes.
Well, it's going to be the last year in London, actually, this year. So it's a bit of a farewell to the XL. We'll be striding up and down those halls for the last time. Are you looking forward to it?
Yeah, I guess I am. It's going to be nice not having to go to the XL Centre in February, I think, from next year. I think it'd be quite fun to be in Madrid right now, wouldn't it? No, Barcelona even.
Either would be fine for me. Yes. I'm sure they're both very nice this time of year. So let's see what happens next year. But hopefully this last edition of ICE is going to be a successful one and a productive one. And anybody out there who's watching who wants to find me or Zach at the show, why don't you just drop us a message, come and say hello. Our usual co-host, Nico Jansen, will of course be there as well. So we can have a little bit of a weekly news reunion, hopefully. So lots to look forward to there. Now, this week, we've got a couple of big stories to discuss, Zach. Today, just this morning, we got the Q4 and full year 2023 results from Evolution. So lots to look at there. But first, we had a story from across the pond because Flutter Entertainment, of course, the owner of US sports betting market leader FanDuel, has listed its shares on the New York Stock Exchange. It's now dual listed in London and New York. It's dropped out of the Euronext in Dublin, I believe, and it's now dual listed, as I say, in London and New York. Zach, I know you've been following this story very closely for quite a long time now, actually. So why don't you fill us in a bit on the background of this update?
Yeah, cheers. Thank you so much, Connor. So, I mean, this was first floated in February last year, in a regulatory release where they said they were going to go talk to their investors and their shareholders. And they did that. And it appears they got quite positive feedback. So they went ahead. It was approved at a company meeting. They always have the same bullet points in every regulatory release about why they want to do this. One is to enhance the group's profile in the US, to better enable recruitment and retention of US talent. Access to deeper capital markets, because, you know, Wall Street has more investors than London, and provide greater overall liquidity to Flutter shares, and very importantly, give optionality to pursue a primary listing in the US, which is one of the criteria for accessing important indices.
So, yeah, absolutely. So there's a lot of rationale behind this. They've obviously been thinking about it seriously for a long time, as Flutter has kind of built up that primary position in the US as the sports betting market leader with FanDuel. So this week, it finally happened. They rang the bell on the New York Stock Exchange. Do you want to tell us what kind of happened, what happened there and what happened afterwards?
Yeah, so they didn't waste any time, really. On the day they rang the bell on the stock exchange, they said, well, they would be pursuing a primary listing in the US And then they gave some details about how that would happen. So they're gonna vote on it at their AGM on the 1st of May with a sort of kind of a approximate schedule to do so Q2 or Q3 this year. So this is like one of the top 20, if I remember right, businesses by market cap on the London Stock Exchange, moving across the the Atlantic, which is bad news for the FTSE 100. Companies doing like that.
Yeah, I think I saw some analysis in your article that viewers can see just by scanning the QR code in the corner there. We've got four big questions that remain after Flutter's New York listing. And one thing that did come up is this kind of, ugly duckling view of London all of a sudden, you know, once a great place for businesses to find the right investment by listing on the stock exchange there. And yet all of a sudden we've kind of seen, I think, a trend in recent years for businesses to favour US listings. Have you got the research from Edison Group in front of you, Zach? Because they have some stuff to say about this.
I do, yeah. So the director of research at Edison Group, Neil Shah, said London's role as a jilted partner continues, with yet another company leaving its embrace on the promise of a higher valuation and deeper pools of capital in the US. Certainly, the easing of sports betting regulation in the US, coinciding with heavier regulation in the UK, is a major factor in the scramble for US market share. However, that a top 20 company has chosen to depart the city, with Flutter's secondary listing status excluding it from the FTSE 100 inclusion, follows a very worrying and very public trend of listed companies losing trust in the city, which must prompt the government to turbocharge its listing reform. So it's getting a little bit political there. But I think the important point is that this wasn't inevitable. I mean, lots of countries on the FTSE 100 have earned some or majority of their profits their revenue overseas. The fact that just because Flutter has a very successful US business in FanDuel doesn't necessarily mean that it had to do this. So in that way, London is being a little bit jilted. But, you know, we have to remember that Flutter isn't really in its DNA a British business. I mean, it was formed in the 1980s as a consortium of Irish bookies. In the Betfair merger, it really was the top dog. Its HQ is in Dublin. There is an argument to say, in many ways, it's more an Irish business than a British business.
Yeah.
So they don't have to necessarily feel any loyalty to London markets.
No, absolutely. They should pursue the place that's best for them and for their shareholders. And I think the US makes a lot of sense. So what are the kind of expectations about the impact that this might have on the US betting market at large? There must be some commentary on that as well.
Yeah, I mean, so more broadly, there's a question of whether this will make institutional investors in the US reassess gaming more generally, maybe leading to a boost in share prices downstream for like suppliers and affiliates. I know some businesses have struggled with low valuation in recent years. There was that famous incident a few months ago where Jeremy Raper of Raper Capital sent an open letter to the Bragg CEO saying that we should pursue an outright sale because the markets haven't correctly evaluated our worth. And, you know, markets are often don't know what to think of gambling businesses, whether yeah. for perception or perceived regulatory risk. But I think they're having such a big business on the New York Stock Exchange might play a sort of legitimizing role in that way. And also you have to remember there's another kind of attention effect. If more institutional investors are getting involved and analyzing the stocks, they might use that expertise to evaluate the market more broadly. So yeah, I mean, so there are some arguments to that. I don't know if this will actually play out in any significant way, but that's maybe how things will go.
Yeah, I think an interesting way of looking at it is that if you want to invest in the sports betting sector in the US, in terms of US-based companies, you only really have, or only really had until this week, DraftKings, which is kind of a proxy for the market at large, I guess, because it has such a significant market share, and this we have this kind of duopoly between FanDuel and DraftKings, and then in third place you've always got BetMGM. Again, you can hold a share in you can hold shares in MGM Resorts, but then of course the joint venture partner Entain is listed over here as well in the UK. So it's kind of interesting in the sense that by listing Flutter in the US, it kind of opens up both of the companies in this duopoly to US investors more broadly. It could well help to increase valuations across the board, or I suppose it could also lead to greater concentration of capital in the hands of Flutter and DraftKings, and kind of leave everybody else a little bit by the wayside. But it will certainly be an interesting one to watch. I think we had a graphic as well about looking at the share price performance of, there it is, looking at the share price performance of DraftKings and Flutter over the past 5 years. Now, they're not actually a million miles apart. We kind of have these peaks in 2021, 2020, 2021, and then kind of valuations obviously are hugely depressed in 2022 and 2023, but slowly building that momentum back into this year. But if you look at DraftKings, it's up nearly 300% over the past 5 years, and Flutter is up about 160%. So I think, thanks Lorena, I think that you can kind of see the benefit of having that direct exposure among US investors.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely complicated. DraftKings is pretty much pure play US online sports betting, while Flutter's got like 100 other fingers and 100 other pies. But yeah, I mean, it is, you can see there that the that around investors are evaluating around twice as valuable in the long term than they are Flutter right now. I think Chris Grove said to the New York Times for DealBook that Flutter will definitely be hoping that investors will look as favorably on it as DraftKings, that they have historically done with DraftKings.
Yeah, absolutely. So we'll see. But then I know you say that, of course, about Flutter's wide range of brands and markets that it's in, but actually FanDuel makes up a pretty substantial portion of its revenue. So I'm just looking at some of the figures. So in Q4, US revenue was more than 40% of Flutter's overall taking at over £1 billion. So it is Flutter's largest individual market, I believe, if you can call the US an individual market. That's another discussion.
Definitely. And I think also in the long term, they believe that that will only get bigger because, you know, Europe is regulated. Some will argue in some markets pretty stagnant, while the US is growing, they're legalizing. And if iGaming gets going in a really big way, then we could see earnings much higher than we have now.
Yeah, absolutely. It's that same old drum that we're still banging. Once we see more widespread iGaming adoption, you know, the moment iGaming eventually goes live in New York, I'm convinced it's only a matter of time. You know, you probably double the US iGaming market immediately. So there you have it. I guess that's about all there is to say so far about FanDuel Flutter's US listing. Any more commentary to make on that, Zach, before we move on?
No, I just think, I mean, this is happening, but amid like lots of other things that are happening in the US, like sports betting and iGaming market. Right now, I think the road is as open as it's ever been for things to change. The duopoly could continue, the FanDuel DraftKings duopoly could continue, or we could have one player start to pull up significantly ahead, or we could see the smaller competitors really claw back market share. Maybe ESPN Bet, BetMGM will be looking pretty close to the others. So we could see a more multipolar market. But yeah, I mean, I think no one really knows what's going to happen, but it's all going to come down to how the businesses invest in their product over the next year or so, I think.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. It would be nice to see someone come in and do something different, wouldn't it? Because it gets a bit boring talking about the same two companies all the time, but I suppose that's what happens as markets continue to mature. You know, we're slightly more diverse in our market leaders here in the UK, but not much more. Still got a handful of companies holding on to the vast majority of that market share. So anyway, we'll be keeping our eyes on this story and bringing you the latest as it develops. We'll maybe see what's happened in the next few months and see what impact it's had on Flutter as a business. But before we move on to our next story, which is Evolution's Q4 and full year 2023 earnings, I believe we have a short video clip to share with our viewers. There we go. I'm getting some hissing feedback off someone's mic, but anyway, it's gone now. Yes, Next.io New York coming up in just a matter of weeks. So something very exciting to look forward to there. But anyway, we are moving on to our next story of the day, and this broke just this morning. It was Evolution's Q4 results, and I'm going to talk you through a few of the key figures here, Zach. Please stop me if I start to ramble, because I do like to get into the weeds when it comes to numbers. But yeah, we've had 16.6% revenue growth in Q4 to €475 million. Evolution continues to keep its exceptionally high EBITDA margin of nearly 71% in the last quarter. So it generated EBITDA of €337 million. Will these juggernauts ever be stopped? I doubt it. But it's a tale as old as time. We've heard it so many times before. Evolution, record revenues, best ever quarter, etc., etc. But of course, that growth has been driven almost exclusively. In fact, no, it has been driven exclusively by live casino and not by the RNG sector, that is to say, online slots. So Evolution generated $405.6 million of its $475 million revenue from live casino. So the vast majority. And live casino was up 21% on the prior year. Meanwhile, RNG was actually down year on year revenue from the RNG segment, down 3.7% to €69, just about €70 million. So I think we've got a chart here that will show you just how different they are. So you can see this massive spike for live casino, over 400 million, I believe, for the first time. And then RNG is down.
The wrong chart there.
No, it's not. It's not. Let's look at this chart, because actually this gives us a good breakdown as well of the regional.
I see.
Kind of regional breakdown of how this all works. So you can see in Europe, we have a very modest growth rate of about 10%, which is, of course, the sign of a highly mature market where the growth is just not exponential anymore. It's very gradual, step by step. North America, as we just mentioned, North American iGaming, where is it? What's happening? Well, pretty limited growth there as well, but still up year on year. And it brought in just about €60 million for Evolution. So not bad, not to be sniffed at, but hardly reaching its full potential yet. Latin America, meanwhile, was an even smaller proportion of revenue, but it was up 19% year on year to €32 million. So one of Evolution's fastest growing segments. And meanwhile, the standout performer continues to be the Asian market. It's creeping up behind Europe on something like €175 or €180 million there. And the growth was, I haven't even got it written down. Oh, I have. It was up 33% year on year to €182 million. Thanks for that, Lorena. So again, with Evolution, we talk about this limited potential in regulated and mature markets. It seems they've kind of penetrated those markets fully. They've got their clients on board, and the results are a little bit same. They are growing, but slowly. And then you have this kind of stratospheric growth in Asia, this huge numbers coming out of Asia. So looks like that might be a region for continued focus. But speaking of LATAM, that's going to be a region of focus too, because Evolution said it will continue to invest in the region in the years to come. And it has initiated a project to build a second live dealer studio in Colombia. Worldwide, Evolution plans to add at least 4 new studios to its portfolio in 2024, as well as expanding in some of its existing locations. If you remember, Evo had a target to release 100 new games in 2023. It actually released 110, so it beat that target. It's having this big product push over the last couple of years. And the CEO, Martin Carlesen, said today that 2024 and 2025 will be product leap years for Evolution. I'm not entirely sure that makes sense. They'll have one extra day in each of these years to come up with new products. I don't know. I think what he meant was, or maybe that is an accepted saying. I don't know. Point is, he's saying, we're going to develop our products a lot. He said, we're going to deliver more exciting games. We will explore new types of games that we don't have today and invest in unique games for specific markets. And we will yet again increase the gap to the competition. So, I mean, what can you say about Evo, Zach? We'll move on to the RNG stuff in a bit more detail in a minute. But live casino wise, you know, they continue to dominate. The revenues are massive. We're approaching €2 billion a year. It was 1.8 billion for the full year. So absolutely unstoppable juggernaut, don't you think?
Yeah, I think it's the nature of the business model that it's got quite high barriers to entry. And so they're not facing a huge amount of competition. And the competition they do have, I think they've got a handle on it. I think Playtech would be the other big one. But I see how that goes. Going back to
Pragmatic has its live casino and on-air entertainment. Let's not get into that just now, but they're all smaller, obviously much smaller competitors. And you're right about the barriers to entry, the infrastructure that Evolution has because of the time and the money that it's invested in building this up is absolutely unrivaled, I'm sure of it. Speaking of Next.io, New York, actually last year we had a speech from Todd Haushalter, who of course is the chief product officer for Evolution, and he gave us an insight into just how complicated these systems are, and it really is quite astonishing the amount of work that's required to make all these games run on every different kind of device at all times across all locations all around the world, live and simultaneously with no lag. I mean, it's miraculous. So it's a miracle that it works at all, I think. So yeah, big barriers to entry, not much competition. I mean, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's kind of the future, isn't it? I mean, their main threats, I think, come more on the regulatory side. There's that interesting class action that they're facing. I don't know how much legs it has, but it turned out they've done some business in some dodgy markets, and that could hurt them there.
Yeah, well, it's no secret the majority, in fact, of their revenue comes from unregulated markets. I don't think we've got details on exactly which markets they are. But there's plenty of rumours about that. I'm sure you can find them if you Google them. But yeah, certainly it's got a lot of exposure to regulatory risk. That's undoubtedly true. But the other big risk for Evolution is its liability. I think when it comes to RNG, it's spent a huge amount of money on acquiring slot studios over the past few years. And I think we've got another graph we can look at just to show you the disappointing growth of each of the RNG segments. So if you see the live casino segment, it's just 800 million in revenue in 2022, 1.2 billion in 800 million in 2021, 1.2 billion in 2022, and 1.5 billion in 2023. It's just mega. And then all of a sudden, you've got RNG here, barely pushing over 200 million, and the growth rate's just tiny in comparison. So Thanks, Lorena. I think the question is, the question for investors, analysts, and us, is can Evolution turn it round on RNG? I would definitely recommend that people go to next.io and have a look at our other story on this, which is titled, Will Evolution's Product Push Be the Spark That Ignites RNG Growth? Written by the extremely capable Sonja Lindenberg. And this was a really interesting piece. It included some analysis from Paul Leyland at Regulus Partners, who, as we know, is always on the money with this kind of thing. And he did not mince his words this morning after those results came out. He said, strategically, Evolution's RNG performance is now disappointing to the point of embarrassing because it's got so much RNG firepower. It's got all these studios, it's got all this knowledge, all these products, and yet somehow it just can't seem to make it work, despite the fact that Regulus said worldwide and across the sector at large, RNG growth should be up about 10% year on year across the board. So Evolution's lagging right behind. What do you make of all this, Zach?
Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, the other thing they were saying in in that Regulus note is how really, I mean, they're live dealer specialists. This is what they know. And so they bought these studios which had problems of their own, but didn't quite have the expertise to fix those problems. And and so I'm sure this is something they've thought about internally and are going to try and turn this around. But I think their problems really date back to that. I mean, how do you fix something that you don't have the expertise in the first place for?
Yeah. And it starts, I guess, now people are starting to bring into question what those acquisitions were for. I mean, it's a nice idea that you can be all things to all people, but actually, I think sometimes you have to draw the line and say, let's focus on what we're good at. Let's dedicate our resources to where they can have the most impact. And maybe Evolution has to look at a lot of these acquisitions and say this was a bit of a mistake. Paul Leyland certainly thought that they were, it seems. You know, it said NetEnt, Evolution was the wrong buyer for NetEnt, which was badly run, commercially overpriced, and offered largely legacy content. As you say, Zach, Paul suggested that Evolution just didn't have the correct solution to those problems. And the additional acquisitions, you know, Limit Cities, etc., do not scale into a solution for the NetEnt problem. So, again, it's a story that we'll continue to follow and see how this develops over time. I mean, I don't know what the route out of this is. Do they just accept it or, you know, keep trying to get that segment to grow, but basically just let it carry on hanging on there? If you're climbing a mountain and you've got a dead weight attached to you, sooner or later you have to cut him loose.
Yeah, I mean, they've got this enormously profitable live dealer business that they kind of that this is diverting money and attention from, where they could focus on. I mean, they're already like the biggest in the world, but really just being in a completely dominant position. Having this by the side, I don't know. I think they might be better off just spinning it off or selling it off and just getting out of RNG altogether. It's clearly not working, and so why keep flogging a dead horse?
Yeah, let's see what happens over the next few years. I guess we'll see if they're able to turn it around. I think that the management commentary today was pretty light on anything that was RNG specific, so I don't think they've provided a specific plan to the market for how to overcome this. It was a little bit general in terms of, oh, we're going to come up with loads of new games and be very inventive and innovative and keep it fresh and interesting, but actually how are you going to do that in slots remains to be seen. There you go. Any closing comments on this one, Zach? That might be the end of the episode for today. I think we've done a nice job of rounding those up.
Yeah, we've filled the time, haven't we?
That's amazing. Well, I get about Nico here to do his 5 and 10, charm us all with his wonderful German accent.
Yeah, no, well, that I think that's all I've got to say. Cheers, Connor. Thanks for having me on.
Fabulous. Well, thanks for joining me, Zach, and thanks to everyone watching at home or in the office. And of course, thanks once again to Playsome for sponsoring us. We really couldn't do it without you, so we are very grateful for your support. I hope to see some of our audience members at ICE next week. I'll be around drinking beer and being generally unproductive, but Zach will be writing news the whole time, I'm sure. So if you see someone hunched over his laptop in the corner, that'll be Zach. And if you see someone propping up the bar, that'll be me. Do come and say hello. But until then, we'll see you next time. And thanks again for joining us. Bye-bye, everybody.
Thanks.
They ain't coming close to me. Flow is on atomic. I'm starting fires through poetry. The heart's out. Staying loyal, no falling out. And if you step onto the court, be ready. We balling out. Yeah.